Incarceration and a road to repair. I'll be speaking in Denver, Colorado on March 15th, Friday night at 7 o'clock at East High School. Check our website at democracynow.org. We have a job opening for a full-time junior systems administrator. Go to the website. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Voices from the Edge is next. Joanne Hardesty is in the studio, and she'll take your phone calls this morning. At 9 o'clock, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, at 10 on the Heather McCoy Show. Heather interviews LA Times sports writer Kevin Baxter. They will discuss the United States Women's National Team's lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation seeking equal pay. At 11, Bookwaves features up-and-coming Nigerian-American playwright Mufoniso Udofia. Then at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, guest Denise Kitchen talks the past, present, and future of alternative comics. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm, click on the button, mark donate. Voices from the Edge is next.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll screen the documentary film Circle of Poison on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Once a pesticide is banned in the United States for its dangerous health and environmental effects, companies are still permitted to manufacture it for export only. Circle of Poison documents the export of dangerous pesticides and the inspiring ways communities are fighting back. Again, that's Circle of Poison on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is looking for a grant writer to join our team. We are seeking someone with a proven track record in writing successful, complex proposals for diverse sources of grant funding. Previous experience working in the philanthropic landscape of the Portland metro area is preferred, and previous experiences working with community media organizations and with communities of color are A+. This is a one-year contract position for a total of 200 hours at $25 an hour, and the grant writer will work closely with the KBOO development director. For more information, go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the KBOO is hiring link on the right side of the home page.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty. I am disappointed this morning not to have DeRay McKinson in our audience to talk to you, but he has promised me that next week he will call in to be part of the show. Who is DeRay McKesson? You may know him because he was very involved after the Ferguson incident as an activist and organizer, helping people find their voice. But one of the things that I love about what he has been doing since Ferguson took place is that he has been doing research around police contracts and police violence in the United States of America. And it's called Campaign Zero. And so what he's done is look at police contracts in 100 of the largest cities across the country to determine why police who kill people are not held accountable. And so we're going to get into some of the details about that next week on Voices from the Edge. But today, I just wanted to share that he was here last night as part of Pod Save the People at the Revolution Hall. And I was part of the program. And it was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to see so many community members out to hear about both what's happening in the Oregon legislature, because State Representative Jessica Vega Peterson was there, as well as myself as guests. She participated in the news segment, and I had the pleasure of being interviewed by DeRay. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is the City of Council was set today, in fact, to hear about a pilot project on body cams that Portland Police Bureau has been funded to do. If you've ever listened to Voices from the Edge when we've talked about this subject, you know that I am very, 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 very opposed to body cams. And I'm very opposed to it for a lot of reasons. And we can get into those a little bit later. But anyway, it's been taken off the City Council's agenda for this afternoon, but I suspect it will come back. Now, what the police bureau would like permission to do is to spend $800,000 for a pilot project with body cams. As you may know, 2 years ago now, Oregon legislature passed a bill, a body cam bill, that was supposed to set parameters around how body cams would be implemented in the state. And the bill that was passed was pretty weak. It was a bill that basically turned accountability, police accountability, which body cams are supposed to provide, over to the police to decide who had access to the film, how they would get access to the film, and they would, in fact, hold the data. And so for me, any accountability system that puts the people being investigated in charge of the information is in itself not a good oversight system. And so I'm looking forward to having the police bureau come to City Council to explain why we should authorize them to spend $1.3 million. $800,000 is for the purchase, and the rest of the money is for data collection and storage. Anyone who has had body cams, in fact, will tell you that the biggest expense is storing the data. Because if you can imagine, we have a 900-member police force. If just half of them had body cams that they wore 5 days a week, the data storage needs would be absolutely astronomical. Then the other issue becomes public access to that data. So I wanted to let you know that that is not, if you were planning to come to the City Council today to testify on that, that City Council agenda item has been postponed. And as soon as we know when it's back, I will let you know. I will give you a heads up so that you can make sure that your voice is heard. I know that there are many organizations, including Campaign Zero, that believes body cameras can be part of the solution to creating an effective police oversight system. I also want to share with you that what is Campaign Zero? I want to share there are 10 bullet points that address what they see as the biggest issues around police accountability. I think we could live, and I think that we have to really rethink policing in the city of Portland and, quite frankly, around the country, but we get the opportunity to do it here in the city of Portland, and we have to think about what is the role of police in our community. Today, we call police for everything, and especially for people who just look, who make us uncomfortable, which has been the biggest increase in calls to the 911 call center. And so the 10-point platform for Campaign Zero is, one, end broken windows policing. And you might remember broken windows policing was certainly a part of Portland Police Bureau's actions and activities in Inner Northeast, especially over a period of time. I think I have a caller, so before I move on, I think I'll just go and take this caller. Good morning, Camilo. Hi. Welcome to KB.
Hi. I'd like to talk about police accountability, but to take a somewhat different tack, because I just listened to Democracy Now! And heard the program there about restorative justice.
Me too, yes.
So I'm really curious as to whether something like that can happen here in Portland. So I have some questions. One is there any kind of program for victim reconciliation with the between the victims and the perpetrators in Portland?
You know, I don't know if any program like that exists today. There used to be a program, and I'm old, so I'm probably not going to remember the name of it right now, that actually was a voice for crime victims who didn't believe incarceration was necessarily the response to being harmed by another community member. And they were a strong voice countering Crime Victims United, which was the only voice representing crime victims in Salem for a lot of years. And that led to a lot of mandatory minimums, led to a lot of stiffer crimes, and led to this get tough on crime approach that today we are still trying to pay for. And I cannot remember the name of the other group. I don't know if they still exist. So that's all I know about that issue right now.
So in the Democracy Now! Piece, I mean, clearly that was not about police violence.
No.
It's about civilian violence.
Right.
But I would like to hope that it's possible for there be some kind of reconciliation process between the police and the victims of police killings. Do you think that there's any potential for that to happen?
Well, I mean, I would hope so, but here's the thing. My experience has been is that you cannot get to reconciliation without dealing with truth first. And my experience with police is they just want to get to reconciliation. They don't want to talk about what happened yesterday. Let's just be friends today, right? And for a community that's been harmed over and over and over again, you can't start with the end result. You have to go back and address the harm that's been done. And I have not seen an effective strategy yet that actually addresses that issue.
So do you think there's any kind of path to work on that approach?
Well, I think we have to do several things before we get there. I think first we have to take back control of our police force. I think first we have to reevaluate what is the role of police in our community. And once we have a community vision of how policing should operate, then we should make sure that the system supports that. So, for example, in my view, it's not that we don't have enough police officers. We just have them very poorly assigned. Police officers have two basic jobs, solve crime and prevent crime, period. They're not mental health professionals. They're not housing experts. They're not they're not to be used as a removal device for people who people are uncomfortable with seeing. So first we have to get back control of our police force. And that means that if a police officer is found to do egregious behavior, we don't pay them to go away. We fire them and they stay fired. Today, when you fire a police officer, they do not stay fired. If it's taken to arbitration, 99.99% of the time, the arbitrators side with the police union. And the reason they do that is because the city council gave over control of the police to the police over 20 years ago. If you look at the police contract, there's no other public employee contract that says you can't do anything that may embarrass the person who's being disciplined. Well, that's ludicrous, right? I mean, it's like, who puts that into a contract? There's a lot of things in the police contract that are inappropriate for people who are public servants. And so the first thing we have to do is get control of the contract. Once we get control of the contract, then we start making sure that police only do police work, that we don't move them into the social service realm because they're not experts in that realm. Once we do that, then we can start going back and having the community reconciliation processes. But first, we've got to have control. We, the public, who pay their salaries, who pay their retirement, are the ones that must have control of our police departments.
I understand and agree with you about that, but I can see that would take a huge political struggle. And
if not now, when? I mean, with the DOJ, right?
I'm not denying that we should make that struggle, but I think while that struggle is happening, there's a need for some kind of reconciliation with the victims and the perpetrators of these awful events.
Well, again, I mean, I have been in meetings where we've attempted to have a real dialogue with police and community members, especially community members who've been harmed. And, you know, the police have a lot of excuses for why unarmed community members are killed, why people with mental illness are killed. And as a community, we just accept those responses. But it, when it's your family, when it impacts you personally, you think, well, how is that even possible? The last gentleman who was killed by Portland police was still in his hospital robe. He was blind. He was clearly disorientated. And again, he was killed within 2 minutes of showing up at the door of a house that the gentleman ended up at because he was across the street from the hospital that let him loose, right? So again, it's like, I don't know how you can even start the conversation without us having some control of the people who we've hired to protect and serve us.
Okay. We're in for a bit of a battle then to accomplish that.
It's a worthwhile battle. I mean, this is not a battle worth fighting for, when are we ever going to have control of the people who are sworn to protect and serve us? And they're not just sworn to protect and serve some of us. They're not just sworn to protect downtown Portland. They are sworn to protect and serve us all. And if we're not all getting the same type of service, then we have to take back control of the folks who have that position. And so, I mean, I'm not mad. I just realize that we keep tinkering around the edges, and tinkering around the edges is getting us nowhere. Since 2014, when the Department of Justice came, every person killed by Portland police had a mental health issue. Every single one. So how can we say, oh, well, we fixed that. Let's check that box. We haven't, right? And so for me, first we take control of the police force, and we actually tell the police how we want to be policed. And then we can have all kind of conversations about how do we build better interactions, better relationships. But I think the big problem is the city council gave away control of policing over 20 years ago. And until we take it back, we will never, ever have a police force that protects and serves us all.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Appreciate the call. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. By the way, I also want to mention that there is a bill that I'm watching in the Oregon legislature, Senate Bill 577. Senate Bill 577 is a bill that would expand the hate crimes law in the state of Oregon. As no one is surprised who has been following this knows that our laws are very antiquated, out of date, and insufficient for the rise of white supremacy that we are experiencing all over not just the country, but all over Oregon as well. This bill is a work product of our Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum, who did a series of community listening sessions around the state in preparation for this legislative session. The bill would change the name of the crime of intimidation to bias crime to better reflect the nature of the offense. And it would require district attorneys and Oregon State Police to track standardizing data on hate crimes and share it with the Criminal Justice Commission. I can tell you now that we do a very, very, very poor job of tracking hate crimes in the state of Oregon. In fact, part of the FBI's advocacy around us staying in the Portland Joint Terrorism Task Force was that they were prioritizing prosecuting hate crimes. But I don't know about you, but I have not seen any federally prosecuted hate crimes. So supposedly in Oregon, especially in the Portland metro area, we have the FBI investigating hate crimes. We supposedly have Portland Police Bureau investigating hate crimes. We also supposedly have the Department of Justice investigating hate crimes. But again, I can't count on one hand the number of hate crimes that have been investigated and prosecuted in the state of Oregon. Especially in the last few years with this huge rise in hate crimes. In fact, there is one hate crime on trial right now in Multnomah County for a gentleman who was killed in Gresham as someone was yelling racial epithets at him and then ran him down and killed him with his vehicle. He and his girlfriend are currently standing trial. But I have to say, from following the trial so far, it looks like that the defense attorney is doing an excellent job of dispelling the allegation that this was somehow a hate crime. So we'll have to keep following that and see what happens. This bill did have a work session. Senate Bill 577 did have a work session this week in Salem, and it is expected to pass out of committee. It has a strong list of co-sponsors, but you know, nothing is law until it passes out of the Senate, passes the House, and then makes it to the governor's desk. So it's my hope that we'll be able to get that bill through very quickly. I want to go back again and talk about the campaign zeros. I started with ending broken windows policing, which is a theory that if you come down tough on soft crimes like jaywalking or trespassing, then if you do that and you give people severe sanctions for those minor activities, then somehow that will reduce crime. That theory has never worked, and it should never be part of a policing strategy that is attempting to build community relations. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to KBOO.
Joanne, yeah, first off, thank you for your show, and thank you for the work you're doing for us.
Thank you.
What I'd like to know is, does the general public realize how much bias there is in the police department on the side of these neo-Nazis and these right-wings and these white supremacists? Does the public have any idea how totally biased the police force is?
They do not. In fact, it's amazing to hear the police say that there's nothing they can do with brawls happening downtown Portland in broad daylight between white supremacists and people who come to stand up to white supremacists. I've been appalled, quite frankly, that we have not had the kind of leadership that just tells the white supremacists who live in Vancouver that they are not welcome in Portland and we don't want them here. Other communities have been very clear about that, and guess what? They don't come.
I just don't understand it. I mean, their actions, how can they say that when their actions, everybody knows it, it gets broadcast time and time again, they basically surround and attack any of the peaceful protesters and then just egg on the bad guys. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, this has been a trend in Portland, very visible ever since number 45 was elected. And what we've seen is police come out in riot gear and face the anti-protesters with their back to the white supremacists.
Time and time and time again. How many times is it going to take for people to open their eyes?
That is a very, very, very good question. Now, so what I know is that based on the text gate, with the officer who was texting with Joey Gibson, and in my view, giving him information that he was not entitled to, that is moving forward with an independent investigation. It cannot be done by Portland Police. It cannot be done by IPR, Independent Police Review, which is an independent and doesn't really review the police. It must be done by a nationally recognized expert in police violence. And so what I know is that the mayor has agreed to actually contract for outside a review of that situation. Recently, I talked to Chief Outlaw and asked her what was happening with the investigation that we're still waiting for August 8th. When the police visibly and physically attacked counter-protesters with weapons, and with the one man who was almost killed, if he didn't have a bike helmet on, he would be dead today, right? I'm like, well, what happened? Where's that investigation? And her response was that IPR is the one that's doing that investigation.
And what did she say about it?
She's not doing it. IPR, which is under the auditor's office, is the one that took control of that investigation, right? In my mind, IPR is never, it almost never finds the police have been wrong in anything, and so I the fact that it's taken so long and we still don't have the results is a problem, one. And two, that is not the appropriate organization to be investigating police violence.
Good for you. Yeah. Hey, what about the FBI? Can we have faith in them based on their sketchy history?
No.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, no, right? It's like
It's scary. It's a nightmare. We're having our democracy swept out from under our feet, and people are just going to work, you know, buying their cigarettes and their beer and their gasoline, as long as they can buy. Come on, folks, wake up.
Well, I think people are having a slow awakening. I sit right now, there are a lot more people who are paying closer attention. I think that many people are automatically trust and believe people in authority, because we were all raised to do that, right? So we trust and believe people in authority. But when you've been misled over and over and over again, like for me, I can't trust any information that comes out of Portland Police Bureau, because anytime there's an independent investigation, it gives a totally different story than what we hear from the police directly. So I never trust information that they give me directly. I have to do my own investigation after I've asked them to answer a question.
They think they're safe, but they're next. Well, anyway, I'm going to get off the air, but, it's amazing. You know, we got to do something to wake people up, and they're getting it swept out from under them. They think they're safe. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking Germany 1936. Hello, is anybody paying attention?
Well, right, it is certainly slipping out from under us, our ability to control our own destiny. But
it's been swept out from under us.
Well, there are things we can do here, right? D.C. is like another nightmare, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I refuse to believe that we can't do better here in Portland, and I'm going to do everything I can to make that happen.
I'll join. I'll do what I can.
I appreciate that.
I'm just an old 71-year-old white guy, but believe me, I'm a musician, so maybe I got a slanted point of view, but I think those peaceful protesters have more courage, you know, just to be able to put up with that malarkey. It's just such a nightmare, and we keep hearing about it over and over. I know the mainstream media, people need to listen. You know, they're getting fed what they want to hear, and they're not willing to listen to something that's maybe medicinal for them, maybe a little bit of astringent that they need to hear.
Yes, and if they're listening to Fox News, turn that off, right? That'd be the first thing I'd say. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate you. Bye-bye. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Sean. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you?
I am good. How about you?
Awesome. Well, listen, the very first thing I want to say for anybody who understands, and this is the main point of my call, is the correlation between local police and the federal government, and how that ties into the book that I'd want to recommend to anybody to read by Dana Priest and William Arkin called Top Secret America, The Rise of the New American Security State. It was written back in 2010. William Arkin, which most people had never heard of, I hadn't even heard of. Recently, he was on Democracy Now, and they mentioned his book. He had quit as an analyst for NBC after years, and he at once was an analyst for the government, but he quit because of media's collaboration with the government in promoting unending war and the massive growth of the security state. And so the point of my call is I think people underestimate the massive collaboration between the federal government and local police departments. And, of course, we can talk about JT, you know, the Joint Terrorism Task Force is just one example.
Right.
And you mentioned about how important it is, the police, where it's really all about sweeping up information and how expensive that is.
Yes.
And that is, you know, the premise of his book greatly is all about that. Ever since 9/11, this has been about a massive money-making scheme.
Yes.
Involves all the intelligence services in the U.S. government, but on down to every local and municipal police force in the United States.
Yes.
And it's all about sweeping up people's data and information and storing it for the possibility, because you just mentioned this a few minutes ago, about hate crimes
yes.
in the city. And, of course, it's not just Portland. But they use the premise under the term terrorism that they need all this information for the possibility that one incident will happen to justify all this happening and the gazillions of dollars that are being spent.
Yes, yes.
And the amount of buildings that's going on, the expansion of Homeland Security, but also the passing down of all this new gear to the local police departments, making them more dependent on grants from the federal government,
yes.
but also putting downward pressure financially on every municipality because they have to come up with the money to buy a lot of this stuff,
yes.
to be a part of the system, because the police departments are wanting to get on board to be a part of it. And so you not only have this stress financially already on cities just trying to have money to have basic services, but now because the massive expansion of the police state is causing that they have to spend money to acquire this, and the police forces are behind that, and the strength, I don't need to tell you, the strength of the police unions. You know, I mean, the whole thing is so interconnected. And
yes.
my last point is tying that in, is I firmly believe that, you know, the Bundys taking over the mall here, and his father, Cliven Bundy in Nevada, the BLM, he stood down the BLM, and
yes.
they were successful, so-called successful at that there's not only the tie on local police departments supporting the white nationalists, because technically police departments are very conservative.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And the federal government is very conservative, and I firmly believe that part of the reason they allowed the Bundys, whether the stand down with the BLM in Nevada or at the mall here, you know, they had to go after Finicum to look like they were doing something. It could have been far worse if they really wanted to come down. But overall, they support those people because they are the same, more or less, in a way, as the white nationalists. They are all about supporting a system that overall the government wants.
I continue to tell people, if Black Lives Matters had taken over some federal facility and said,
exactly.
you know, right? Or if a Native Water Protectors had taken over a federal facility, it would have been over within a day. And there would have
right.
been many lives lost.
Or the valve turners, right?
Right. Or the valve. Right. 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 It's like,
but
you
they
pick.
Had to show yes. some type of force
right.
by killing Finicum. But where did they do it? They were smart. They waited till they were driving on the extreme rural road to go
yes.
give a talk that night, and close them off. And there was a firefight, and nobody could really prove what happened.
Yeah,
right?
that's true. But it's
okay.
not. So let me also. I agree with everything that you've said, and I can't wait to check out the book that you recommended. There's one
it's
other
amazing.
Piece.
It's mind-boggling.
There's one other piece that we don't talk about, is that's using public dollars to support private security with no public oversight. So again, extending the police state to private companies and what is the organization downtown? It just went right out of my head. It's not Clean Slate. What is it called? It's the one ran by the Portland Business Association.
Oh, that, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm blanking on it. But when I remember, I'll say it again on the air.
That's right.
But my point is that we are taking public dollars out of the public sphere. Even
yeah.
TriMet did this. TriMet sent a $7.2 million contract to Portland Patrol, Inc., to provide security service on MAX and bus lines without
mm-hmm.
public dialogue, without a public request for proposals. They did a single source with Portland Patrol, Inc. The security people who make up Portland Patrol, Inc. are all ex-Portland police officers and ex-military.
Bingo, which is the same thing in the federal government. All these guys who work for the military,
yes.
they go off and they either become directors on the board of directors of new startups, or they do a startup that's directly related to the military because they see there is a huge amount of money
to be
made.
Bingo.
And in this book, one of the many things is it shows the amazing discrepancy of percentage between the amount of money going to private entities or corporations as opposed to it actually being a government entity.
Oh, I agree. But we could spend all day talking about this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call. I greatly appreciate it.
Off the air is if you could just give your opinion as to why you think the council would see the logic in turning the police over essentially the wolf to guard the sheep's den. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. So why do you think that is?
As you started with, the police union is pretty powerful. And we have not had a police commissioner willing. And the last three ran on police reform. And all three pretty much have turned police reform over to the police bureau.
Yeah. Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And let me tell you what's coming up on Naboo. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10 on Heather McCoy's show, Heather interviews LA Times sports writer Kevin Baxter, who will discuss the United States women's national team's lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation seeking equal pay. At 11, Bookwaves features up-and-coming Nigerian-American playwright Moniso Odufoye. Then at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, guest Dennis Kitchens talks the past, present, and future of alternative comics. And, of course, this program is made possible by people just like you. If you're not a member yet, just go online and click the button marked Donate. Become a member that way. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Linda. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
It's Linda Olson, Osterlund. I'm glad you're on this morning. Hey, I interviewed William Arkin about Top Secret America.
Oh, okay.
KBOO, and so any of our audience who would like to hear that interview, it was a few years ago, but I am also interviewing him about his letter of resignation on the 29th of this month, Friday at 9 a.m. the 29th.
Excellent.
So you can hear Bill Arkin again. But you can also just go to the search button on our homepage and put in William Arkin, and any interviews that have been done of him will pop up, including mine. So go for it, public out there who would like to hear him on Top Secret America. And please do tune in next time, the 29th. But what I was calling about, and actually I was going to hesitate and not call, but then I heard him mention that book, so I did, was about the fusion centers. I wondered if you'd gotten to visit, and if you know if there are still Portland police officers working in the fusion center that's located in the metropolitan area. It's a federal government for the public. It's a federal government place where all law enforcement locally and up through representatives from the FBI and Homeland Security all work together on coordinated activity, police activity, surveillance activity.
Well, Linda, as you know, I did meet with the Fusion Center staff. And in my conversation, they were like, we are just very, very tiny. We're here to help the public. We're all about public education, how to keep the community safe. Based on what I was told, they say no, that there are not Portland police officers working in the Fusion Center. But do I believe what I was told? No, I don't. I believe that it's a much more interwoven, integrated system than what we, the public, have any clue about.
Yeah, and we know we did. You got the copy of my email from them,
yes.
From the DOJ. We know they did have Portland police officers on it, two of them, but we don't know when they left, apparently, now.
Yes.
Or whether they were the same as the JTTF. Yeah, I think it's a good place to do FOIAs and try to get more information. I think I'll be digging into that again in the future then.
I appreciate that. Let me know what you find.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
Joanne.
You. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Tremaine. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. My wife and I are so pleased that you are on the Portland City Council, even though we live in rural Oregon.
Well, I thank you very much.
And I have one thing I would like to say. We belong to the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I'm sure you're familiar with
Absolutely,
them.
Absolutely, yes.
Anyway, in one of their recent publications, they mentioned Chief Outlaw by name, and they were critical of her while she's lend credence to the white nationalists, and that she's normalizing their behavior, and that some of the remarks she's made, you know, on the Lars Larson show.
Yes.
And I think she's bringing discredit to the city of Portland by her failure to stand up to white nationalism in Oregon. And I'm very, very critical of her, and I think she's really bringing discredit to the city of Portland, particularly when she gets outed by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
And I
think we need to look at her behavior much more seriously than we have been.
Well, let me give you another perspective. So Chief Outlaw is the first African-American woman to hold the title of chief.
I knew that.
She did not come up through the ranks of Portland Police Bureau. She came from Oakland, California.
Right.
I used to live in Oakland, California, so I know that Oakland and Portland are as different as night and day.
And they had a lot of real problems with the police department in Oakland, California.
They did, and in fact,
when she was an officer there.
That is absolutely true, but
okay.
She is absolutely the only high-level police officer that did not lose their job through the series of chiefs that came and went and higher up leadership.
I respect your opinion.
Right? So, I mean, but so that's one part, right? The other part is what she's inherited is a white male dominated force that believes that they know best what the city of Portland needs.
I agree with you, and
right?
They probably cannot stand her.
And they are fit to be tied because they wanted the officer that they had, which wasn't going to make them do anything different than what they've always done, right?
Right.
So here she walks in expecting that she's going to be able to walk in with her number two person because that's what she was promised when she negotiated a contract. And she finds out that her bosses haven't actually filed the paperwork. So she loses the one person that she would be able to trust within the Portland.
I respect your defense of her. I respect your defense.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, I called her after Lars Larson and said, what was up with that, right? So, but I'm just trying to give you context, right?
Good.
Now, because again, she's been here a year.
Yes.
She's been under attack the entire year. She has a police force that doesn't want her. It doesn't
right.
feel like she has the support of the people who hired her. Doesn't feel like it to me. And so here she is, this woman from Oakland,
okay.
trying to lead this 900 police member police force, right? So the first thing she has to do is to gain credibility with the rank and file, right?
Right.
Because you can't make any changes if the people under you don't want to change, right?
But she doesn't need to lend credence to white nationalists where it gets into the national press.
I agree. I agree with you.
That's a big mistake she made.
But here's again, when you are in a paramilitary organization that doesn't want you. Now, how do you think she ended up on Lars Larson unprepared for who he was and how he was going to look for an I got you moment?
No, I respect that.
Right?
Yeah, no, I respect that. But what I'm saying is that we need to look closely at some of her behavior that makes Portland look like a racist city.
But it is.
I understand the history, Joanne.
Right.
But I'm just saying that she needs to be held accountable for giving credence to some of these, patriot prayer type people.
I agree.
Stand up a little stronger.
I absolutely agree. There's no excuse for Portland police officers to turn their back on patriot prayer and point their weapons at counter protesters.
Joanne, I know where you stand, and I respect it. And I just wanted to make the comment about Chief Outlaw when she's drawing this kind of negative publicity to Portland from the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Right. I hear you. And we have to change that. So we have to change that by holding people accountable for the behavior that's happened.
You may have heard me what my solution is?
What's that?
All right. And you're going to laugh. You run for mayor. You become mayor of Portland. You take charge of the police department. That is the best thing that could happen to Portland. The best thing that happened during this last election for my wife and myself, even though we live in rural Oregon, was your election to the city council of Portland. And I think that's a wonderful thing that you have done. And my solution is you run for mayor, become mayor, take charge of the police department.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you and your wife's confidence in me.
All the time you were in the legislature, too, we had it.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Valerie. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I have 3 points in response to the other callers. One for the gentleman just before me, which is that, yeah, of course, I totally agree with him, except that I think one person at the top cannot really do things anymore. You know, really what we all should be doing is writing, especially letters to the Portland police, you know, saying what we feel and what we think should happen. Okay, so that's one. I think we all have to kind of take responsibility for personal response. Then number two, the person much earlier who was talking about, you know, the Portland police always facing the liberal protesters.
Right.
Well, you know, if you really would look carefully at 1933, one of the real problems was that the communists were fighting the black shirts and et cetera in the streets with clubs and so forth. And so Antifa is really not a good idea. I understand their rage, but passive, peaceful protesting is the answer because that changes people's minds. Confront the white supremacists with, this is just my opinion, I mean from history,
mm-hmm.
I think is a bad technique because it opens up a route for the police and right-wing groups to escalate the fighting and to justify more draconian measures against our freedoms. That's my feeling. If they really look at the 30s, that's what happened. And then the third thing is that when I moved to Portland from LA, I knew that police everywhere are corrupt, but Mark Krueger should not be on the police force.
I agree.
Yeah, that is, you know, letting him do what he did, and then he harassed a female officer as well, I understand. It's got to go, you know. I mean, I understand Chief Outlaw is in a you know, precarious position, but again, I think we as people have to take responsibility. All the listeners to KBOO need to be writing letters and so forth.
Writing letters, you know? Showing up, and quite frankly, contacting the entire city council, not just the mayor, because the mm-hmm. entire city council passes the police budget, and the entire city council has responsibility for how policing happens. Let me just say, I agree with all of your points. I am also someone, when I organize and participate in protests, it's always based on a nonviolent direct action approach. Having said that, I have seen with my own eyes the police escort white supremacists through the streets of Portland to keep them safe. They did it on 82nd Avenue. We've seen them turn their back to counter protesters and allow white supremacists to do whatever they want. They've even used them to help them arrest counter protesters. Now, I do not agree with violence at all. But again, I what I've seen is even before any violence breaks out, if the police are set to attack people who are standing up to white supremacists, and I think we have to stand up to them. We can't let white supremacists take over our streets. I think we have to speak very loudly and very clearly. You're not welcome here. This is unacceptable, and that's not the America I want to live in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, too many white people are completely passive. You know, I get this attitude that, you know, the police are good. They don't understand the police. They've never had dealings with the police.
No.
If they had, then they would know that they're not benign, that they do whatever they want to do when the cameras aren't on them, and that in a lot of cases they'll break your camera or take your camera when the cameras are on you. And the only thing is to, like you said, you know, to support them. But also the city council cannot allow the police to blackmail them. The police operate like a criminal gang.
Yes.
They're like the mafia. They say, okay, we won't protect you if you don't give us this. But the point is, the council should just turn around and say, what are you, the mafia? You have to protect us. Even if we don't give you the budget you want, you have to protect us. That's your job. What else is your job?
Well, and we have to actually counter the argument about how overworked and underpaid and understaffed they are. The reality is, if we took police out of the schools, if we took police off of the special task force and retrained them and made them patrol officers, we'd have many, many, many more officers on the street. So it's not that we don't have enough officers, it's that we deploy them in a way that is comfortable for the senior leadership within the police bureau. I think the biggest problem in the police bureau is mid-management, the biggest problem, and the lack of accountability in the contract. And so we got work to do. But thank you. Appreciate the call.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a great day. 503-231-8187. We're getting minus on minutes. Good morning, Anthony. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What I wanted to know was why the city of Portland doesn't do what some other cities have done with troubled police departments, and that was completely fire the whole police department and have them reapply and weed out the bad apples.
Well, I only know of one police department in the country who did that, and they did it. I think it was, let's see, I just knew, and then it just went out of my head. And the reason they did it was basically budget reasons. They went broke. And so, in going broke as a city, they fired all the police department personnel. Newark, it was Newark, New Jersey's police force that did this. And what they did was hire a police chief who had a totally different perspective of how community policing should operate in their city. And what he did was interview all the police officers that used to be on the force and said, this is my vision and this is where we're headed. Are you for it? And if they weren't, they were not rehired, right? The only reason why we haven't done that is because of the contract. The contract does not allow us to fire everybody and start over.
So how would the city of Portland go about doing away with the police union?
That is a very good question, and that is a question that I do not have the answer to. What I can tell you is that the police union's contract comes up again in 2020. And my plan is to make sure that we're not tinkering around the edges and that we, the people of Portland, take back control of our police department. And so what that means is it's going to take a lot of people to actually be able to articulate to the city council what they want from their public servants who wear uniforms. And that's going to be the conversation. So over the next year and a half, we're going to be having some very deep conversations about what should policing look like. Police certainly should not be called when people have mental health issues. They certainly shouldn't be called because people are uncomfortable with someone outside of their building. And so we have to retrain the public and retrain the police. At the same time, we are fundamentally revitalizing their contract.
Yeah, I see your point. It's not an easy thing to do without the help of the people.
It's not going to be easy, but I absolutely have confidence that with enough community support and pressure, the city council will have no choice but to actually radically reform how policing operates in the city of Portland.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be nice. I believe it's possible.
Yes, I. Yeah, like you say, it can be done with the help of the people.
That's right. That's the only thing that's going to change it, is the people demanding that change. Thank you so much for your call. Greatly appreciate
it. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye.
And so we are almost out of time. I just want to let you know again that DeRay McKenson is going to be on next week. And I only got through like a couple of the items from the campaign zero. So I'm going to go through them very quickly. I talked about in broken windows policing. Number two, community oversight. No explanation necessary. Three, limit the use of force. 4, independent investigation and prosecution, which is something I put a bill in the legislature 10 years ago trying to pass. Community representation, body cams, film the police. Now, and that's the one I disagree with. I don't like body cams, but I do agree totally with community members filming the police. That's absolutely vital. Training is number 7. Number 8, in for-profit policing. 9, demilitarization. I'm totally on board with that. And number 10, fair police union contracts. That is absolutely vital. And so that is the 10-point platform for Campaign Zero. You can go to joincampaignzero.org to get more information and read up before next week when I have the privilege of talking to DeRay. I really, really enjoyed the program last night. It was a very positive experience. I was so thrilled they reached out and invited me to participate. Apparently, normally when they come to town, they interview the mayor or some other important person. So I was very humbled by the phone call and request for me to join them last evening. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I will look forward to continuing this conversation because, again, I want to make sure that the public is in charge of having the kind of police force that they want, because it is totally up to us as the public to decide how we want to be policed and whether or not police are doing the job that we have hired them to do. Again, I'm not someone who looks for the easy out, because otherwise I wouldn't have run for Portland City Council. Not looking for an easy out, but I'm looking for dedicated community members that are willing to do the work that it's going to take to really reform our police department and to make all of us safer in the short term and long term. The reality is that a safe community is a community where you know community members, where community members look out for each other. Safety does not come with a badge and a gun. Safety comes because as a community, we are looking out and caring for each other. And so when we talk public safety, we have to change the dialogue to make sure that people understand public safety is us being in community. Public safety is not weapons and force. This has been Voices from the Edge. I look forward to seeing you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous, fabulous day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. You don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up.
Stand up. Good morning, it's 8:57. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10 on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather interviews LA Times sports writer Kevin Baxter. They will discuss the United States women's national team's lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation seeking equal pay. At 11, Bookwaves features up-and-coming Nigerian-American playwright Mfoniso Udofia. Then at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, guest Denise Kitchen talks the past, present, and future of alternative comics. All this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate. It's 8:58, and Press Watch is up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Fixing Your City, Creating Thriving Neighborhoods, and Adapting to a Changing World on Thursday, March 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Portland. Fixing Your City, Creating Thriving Neighborhoods, and Adapting to a Changing World is a book release and talk by urban architect George Crandall. He'll discuss Portland growth, congestion, and global warming, and identify steps the community can take to shape an equitable and resilient Portland. Again, that's Fixing Your City, Creating Thriving Neighborhoods, and Adapting to a Changing World, on Thursday, March 14th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, 147 Northwest 19th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Hello, this is Susan Cecil, and I love KBOO. Do you love KBOO? Call us at 503-231-8032, extension 302, and tell us why you love KBOO. We'll use the audio during our upcoming spring membership drive. It takes the community to support the community radio station, KBOO! Yay! The number again, 503-231-8032, extension 302. This has been Susan Cecil for KBOO Portland, signing out. Bye!
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, today, if the telephone leprechauns work correctly, I hope to be speaking to Lucas Kerner, one of the editors of Venezuela Analysis, live from Caracas, Venezuela, and we are working on that as I speak. Fearless engineer Clementine is trying to dial through the chaos in Caracas, and so I want to start with a couple of headline news items. Of course, the reason I want to bring up Venezuela is because the U.S. is basically trying to eat Venezuela, and that is what I've titled this program,